It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we're going to talk with legendary play-by-play man Wayne Larrivee. Calls games for the Packers now, but before that, he was the voice of the Bears and the Bulls and called some of the biggest moments in Chicago sports history. So we'll talk with Wayne Larrivee coming up at 8 o'clock. And at 9 o'clock tonight, Greg Allen from Neofuturist, Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind, will be in studio. 10 o'clock, the worst. Well, media news, you know, Vox put out a Vox.com put out a great story today talking about Tronc, Tribune's, the new name of the Tribune publishing company, really sort of drilled down and took a look at their idea, one of their strategies to produce 2,000 videos a day. 2,000 videos a day. There's a strategy behind it. I don't know if it's going to work, but that's why we have our guest tonight, Mr. Scott Smith. He is the director of editorial content at Teamworks Media, and he's also our download media correspondent. Scott, good to talk to you. How are you, man?
I'm good, Justin. How are you? I'm busy trying to edit, see as many videos as me, one human being, can produce.
That's a lot of videos. I mean it's amazing because that was put out as their sort of, you know, as part of their strategy platform not too long ago when they said this is what we want to do with the company with Tronc. But this piece really is sort of a takedown of automated content and how it's now moving into video.
Right, and it's a follow on this New York Times piece by John Herman from yesterday that really kind of took a look at companies like Demand Media and sort of what is it, you know, what does it mean to produce that? I think when people heard Michael Farrow, you know, the head of Tronc, saying that he was going to produce 2,000 videos, I think people, that was, you know, kind of crazy. You know, we were at, it used to be at TouchVision, a news and video startup, and we did maybe 15 to 20, and those are all sort of human created and things like that. And so the idea that you would do that many is nuts. And, you know, it had to be that human beings couldn't create this content. This was really some kind of automated content making process. And the New York Times looked at companies like Wibbitz, and that's W-I-B-B-I-T-Z, mm-hmm. That essentially take a script and have a sort of computer read it, generate images to go along with it, edit them together, you know, maybe just sort of, you know, smashing them together, if you will, and creating a voiceover for it. And that's essentially what they create. That's a video. And when you watch these videos, and if you go to something like Wibbitz, you can see what they create. A lot of it seems very strange. It feels like a sort of robot put it together. It's what like a robot would imagine good video content would be. It's very spare in detail. It's, you know, essentially robots creating content for other robots.
Well, I mean,
it's not something a human being would want to watch.
It's important to make that distinction, too, because, I mean, there's video production and there's the art of video production, which is done by professionals and you know, artists and filmmakers around the world. But then there's also video automation, which is essentially the idea of video being a platform. And that's where Mike Farrow and Tronc, they believe the future of media is going, where we're going to be much more visual. We're going to be not unlike what we're seeing with Pokemon Go, but the idea that everything's going to be on our phone and we're going to be consuming different forms of media like video at alarming paces. And this is sort of an idea of where we see Tronc going.
Right, and the basic underpinnings of that strategy aren't necessarily incorrect, the idea that mobile will be more important and people will consume different kinds of content. But you have to have an idea of what a human being is really interested in order to get them to watch video. Video is sort of, for a number of reasons, is notoriously difficult to get people to engage with. It's usually longer. People aren't always in the place where they can watch a video when they're looking at things on the internet. You know, they, in most cases, people will tell you that they would rather kind of read an article than watch a video. So there has to be a fairly significant drive in order for somebody to watch a video, which means it has to tell a story, you know, on three or four times as well mm-hmm. as an average piece of text. And so, you know, what we've seen with a lot of automation companies is that they've taken things like, let's say, Little League sports scores and been able to put out a pretty good, you know, approximation of a story. And that technology has actually become better and better. But the technology for where video is in creating something like that on an automated basis is nowhere near as good. and to essentially say that you are going to put a big part of your company's content strategy on top of technology that is not ready for prime time is seen by many people as a huge misstep.
Well, I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm intrigued as someone who I guess inherently believes that these people at the top of this company, you know, are well aware of the automation missteps of the past, that they're not just sort of spitballing and being able to put this together, that they've seen this and are able to evolve it. And one of the things that is involved in this story that's coming out right now is that the idea that if you're going to produce 2,000 videos a day, that's ad revenue, meaning revenue is going to be on the top of each video. This is the idea of the future. That's where advertising wants to put their money. So they want to produce where advertisers are paying. It is interesting that seems like that would be good. And the second part is you can kind of trick Google in a way, or social media, to put video up and put it up there because get good Google search ranks in the way to be able to popularize your content.
Right, but you know, you can only trick Google for so long.
Right.
You know, eventually, and much like Facebook, you know, Google wants people to continue to be happy with what they as a platform provide. So, you know, Facebook is always going to make sure that whatever content people seem to like the most, and in this case right now, Facebook thinks it's content from friends and family, is showing up most often in news feeds. Google is going to make sure that the content that is most like what you are looking for is going to show up in the news feed. And very famously, a few years ago, it cut the legs out from under companies like Demand Media that were creating really low-quality content but were gaming the Google algorithms. And their content dropped precipitously,
right,
and the value of the companies dropped precipitously. And, you know, this idea that you can just create more content and the CPMs on it will be the same has not borne out. If you look at we've done more content, we've done more text articles now than I think we ever have before. And we've only seen banner advertising money and the CPMs for banner advertising drop. That market in the last year has just like cratered. And so we're going to see the same thing happen with video if we just create a bunch of lousy video and just imagine that people are so hungry for video.
Well, let's say this, Scott.
That's
though,
a big assumption. I don't know.
Yeah, but here's where I would push back, just as you and I both know, as sort of being in media for a while. What if it's not lousy? What if the Chicago, as we know it to be Tronc, if Tronc has developed a new style of video, maybe it's a sort of GoPro style, maybe it's putting video to the words of the reports that came out. What if, I mean, let's just say in a perfect world, let's say it's not lousy. Is there a possibility that this is really just a tip to what the future of our media is going to be?
If it is not lousy, they have perfected a technology that other people who are at least as well-funded as they are have not yet perfected. And things have jumped really, really far ahead. And based on the technology at work and other, you know, feral projects like what he did with the Sun-Times Network, I haven't seen necessarily any evidence of that. But is it possible that, you know, video will be more a part of a user's content diet? That I think is true.
Yeah.
But unless you're actually investing the time and effort into it to actually make it really, really of super high quality. I mean, you look at the thing that in terms of streaming video or in terms of video, the thing that people have been talking about the most is something like the 30 for 30 O.J. Simpson documentary, mm-hmm, Made in America. And that was a 7.5-hour researched for years, you know, took a long time to develop. And that was something that's gotten kind of huge, you know, engagement numbers and all that kind of thing. And while you're not going to do 7.5 hours of documentary as web video, it certainly demonstrates that people will gravitate towards really high quality work, but it does have to be high quality in order to get them over the hump of, well, I'm going to watch this video rather than just,
right,
you know, scan through my Facebook feed.
It almost feels like it's a 2.0 argument that journalism and media has been having for decades about fast versus, you know, quality versus quantity. The idea that, you know, we've seen journalists who push back on the idea that if you're going to put this much content, whether it be on a website, whether it be in the newspaper, whether it be videos, whatever it might be, you're going to need more resources to be able to do it because you can't count on accuracy or any sort of depth to these articles if it's got to be so boom, 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 boom.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we've just seen the kind of like, you know, race to the bottom in terms of what we're actually creating. And, you know, the idea that things kind of, you know, half truths, you know, on the internet take off at a rate much greater than the eventual corrections do and all that kind of thing. It's sort of we're kind of getting to a bottoming out period where the needle will start to move back in the other direction. But, you know, with this kind of a strategy for video, and to be fair, Tronc is not alone. You know, Bonnier is another company that New York Times mentioned has this partnership with Wibbitz. You know, the idea that companies are taking shortcuts to content has not borne out as a viable strategy on text. And I don't imagine it's going to do that on video.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with Scott Smith here on the download, and we'll talk about Pokemon Go. I mean, there's a lot of jokes, and we're having a lot of fun with it, myself included. But there is some relevancy to the idea of this app and the way that it has captured people's attention, and it could be the way that we move with media in the future. So we'll talk about that with Scott Smith, who is the Director of Editorial Content at Teamworks Media and our download media correspondent. Stay with us. It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. With me right now on the line, Director of Editorial Content at Teamworks Media, it's Scott Smith. He's our Download media correspondent. Pokemon Go, that's all the rage right now. Everybody's talking about it as a game, but it does have implications for the media world. We're seeing a lot when it comes to augmented reality, in this case for video games, but it could be what we see in the future of how we consume media, right?
Yeah, this is really fascinating. This might be we've been hearing that augmented reality is going to be a thing for, I don't know, maybe 8 years now. And this is the first time that there's been this kind of cultural embrace of it, you know, even though it's, very specific segments of the population. It's now a more installed app than Tinder, a more installed app than Twitter. And it's fascinating. You know, you look through your phone, you see the world around you, but you're essentially a game has been layered on top of the world around you, and you're sort of going around trying to capture all these Pokemon characters so that you can collect enough, and then you go to another place and your character fights against other characters. But the difference here is that you are out in the world and you're walking around and you're engaging in a game, but in a very social way, in the way that I think you and I used to go over to our friend's house and sit around and play Nintendo and that kind of thing. And so there's this really huge social in real life aspect to it that people, you know, who get all incensed about people staring at their phones all sort of ask for. And now we're sort of seeing those two things come together.
Yeah. And I wonder what, how we could see that apply to other, you know, situations. Like when you think about what we were just talking about with Tronc, if augmented reality has a place in journalism, if it has a place in what we're seeing with Snapchat and other places where we're kind of seeing the 2.0s and the 3.0s and even the 4.0s sort of manifest themselves on our phones.
Yeah, I mean, the argument for augmented reality has always been, you know, you might tour a city and hold your phone up and see, let's say, the way the city used to look 50 years ago or 100 years ago or something like that. But just the getting over the, you know, sort of explaining it to people and getting people used to the idea of the expectation of the technology was always hard. And so perhaps that won't necessarily be so difficult anymore. But what we're also seeing is this idea that, you know, there's, you know, I always say the easiest way to ruin something fun is to send a bunch of marketers over to it and get them to get involved with it. But, you know, there's some interesting things. There's a great Inc.com article that talked about ways in which small businesses might actually get involved in this. And we're seeing some, you know, potentially problematic things like, you know, people trying to chase Pokemon at the Holocaust Museum, which is terrible. But businesses are finding that they are now these Pokestops or that they might be one of these gyms where the characters, you know, will fight against each other. And the idea being that, like, there's a bunch of potential customers coming to a business that might otherwise be there. And so what do you do to actually kind of take advantage of that? Right. How do you kind of get in on the gaming fun and stuff like that? And there's all this different terminology, like, you know, throwing down a lure to get these different Pokemon characters to go there, which will then lure actual people. And you can do that by essentially spending poker coins to get people to, you know, to use these lures to get these people over there. And the pricing at this point for something like that is really low compared to, say, other forms of advertising that you might otherwise drive people to your business.
Well, I mean, it's not unlike other gaming systems and what we've seen, you know, with even with PlayStation or Xbox, where the internet has played a big role in sort of introducing concepts to the wider audience. By having augmented reality have such a success with Pokemon Go, it may be an easier sell for a trunk to start using it, for other people to start using it, because it becomes more indigenous.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely, once you've got people used to the idea of the technology, then it becomes aware, like, okay, what are the different ways we could use that? I mean, there's definitely some, you know, initially it looked as if the app was asking a lot of different permissions of users' Google accounts, and so there have been some data issues. And then obviously the app sucks up a lot of data, a lot of location-based data about where you are, where you've been, the kinds of places you go. And so there are absolutely privacy concerns there. You know, Senator Al Franken has already written a letter to the company asking for more information about that. And so I think, you know, even the people who made the Pokemon Go app got sort of caught by surprise by how much the adoption rate of this game was. And so obviously there's going to be this initial huge spike of interest, and then things will kind of balance out in a certain way. And the same way that we saw things like, you know, Foursquare ending up sort of finding a particular level. And you know, even that, I think they found what they had created with their API and that sort of technical platform that they had created had a lot more use and a lot more revenue generating methods as a company than the idea of people checking in places and being mayors. So the underlying tech behind Pokemon Go seems like a potential platform thing that might take off, more so than the idea of running around capturing cartoon characters.
Scott Smith is director of editorial content at Teamworks Media. He's also the Downloads media correspondent. Scott, thanks for taking some time out. We'll talk to you soon, bud.
Take care.